Hello, this is Michael Steve from Kaplan. Welcome to my podcast on land and property. This podcast serves two purposes. The first is as a backup for the people who were able to make the land and property course in London recently. For them, it will be a refresher and a chance to pick up on some of the issues that we discussed. And for those who weren't able to make the course, this is your opportunity to pick up on the types of things that we were discussing on the day. So, what were they? First, we're going to start with some basic building blocks. We're going to look at letting property, who pays, how is it best to hold property, and all those sort of things. A little bit on capital allowances. That's the basic building block. And then we're going to actually put those blocks into context. We're going to look at UK property businesses. We're going to look at overseas property businesses. Then we're going to look at a little bit of capital taxation. And then, to finish, a little bit on the mighty VAT. So let's get stuck into our first part. Let's have a look at some basic building blocks. And I'm going to start with the letting of property. There are two sorts of property letting, where I let property in the UK and overseas. And my image of this is that they are both in their separate cardboard boxes with their own sets of rules. And each box has profits and losses aggregated, but the boxes don't talk to each other. That's quite an important point, especially when it comes to losses, which we'll touch on in just a short while. So let's ask that basic question then. Who pays income tax on property income? Well, if the property's in the UK, then it's going to be taxable in the UK. And in tax, of course, we refer to those as the situs rules. So the normal situs rules apply. And this is an important point. It doesn't actually matter if the owner is resident or not. The property situs is in the UK, the income arises in the UK, and it will be taxable in the UK. Now, under overseas rules, it may be taxable somewhere else, but we're not concerned with that immediately. The other point that's worth making is that there could be personal allowance issues. We've often talked about in the past whether somebody can have a personal allowance. It is, of course, a seemingly innocent question with actually a rather complex answer. But I don't intend to talk about personal allowances here. We've covered those on other podcasts, and we will certainly return to them in the future. One point to make. If you've got a property in the UK with income arising in the UK, and clearly, as we've just said, taxable in the UK, what happens if the landlord is non-resident? I use that phrase rather lightly because there is, of course, the non-resident landlord scheme, which simply means any landlord that's outside the UK. And under that scheme, of course, somebody, an agent, is liable to deduct at source basic rate tax to at least capture some of the tax liability in the UK. Okay, so let's move on then from income tax liability and let's briefly ask the question, who pays capital gains tax on UK properties? Now this one's a little bit more subtle because if you remember from the Taxation of Chargeable Gains Act 1992, there are two sorts of people who pay CGT, persons who are either resident, that's a tax residence measured over 1 year, of course, or ordinarily resident, and that means something in the 3 to 4 year bracket. And the conclusion, therefore, is that if you are neither resident or ordinarily resident, then logically you have to conclude that that property will not be subject to CGT in the UK, even if it's sold for a healthy profit. Now, that comes out of the TCGA. If you need a sort of a background read on that, may I recommend on HMRC's website their leaflet, used to be called IR20, now called HMRC6. And anybody that's advising on property, this is an absolute must. Okay, so that's the basic stuff. IHT, remember, there's a different word in play. That's the word domicile. And if you are domiciled in the UK, you're going to be taxed to IHT on your worldwide assets. But But if you're a non-domicile, a non-UK domiciliary, you're still going to be taxed on IHT on property that is in the UK. So we've got the three basic sets of rules, income tax, CGT and IHT. In a sense, income tax and IHT are singing from, or at least broadly singing from the same hymn sheet. It's the CGT that slightly stands apart with those rather curious rules that we've just been talking about. Now, a question that's often asked, how should property be held? Should I hold property in a company or should I hold property personally? Our answer tends to be, although not universal, of course, that it is best to hold property personally. And the reason for that is the so-called double tax charge. If you hold property in a company and it achieves an increase in value, and then you sell the property still within the company, then the company will pay a tax charge. It will pay corporation tax on the chargeable gain. Okay, that's the first tax charge. The company no longer has a property. It now has some cash. And you want the cash out of the company. So how are you going to get it out? Well, that can only be through a dividend or a bonus stroke salary. And in those circumstances, there's a second tax issue to think about. So generally speaking, it's fair to say that it's best to hold property personally. Now, when it comes to income tax and deducing the income tax rules, what are they? Simple answer here. They basically follow the trading rules. We're talking accruals for income and the normal P&L rules for your expenses, which means, of course, that we have to make distinctions between capital and revenue. And the famous case there, which affects a lot of people in buy-to-lets, is the law shipping case. And in law shipping, if you buy, for example, a buy-to-let, and you have to do substantial work on the property before you can let it, then that is treated as capital. That is not the result that most people want. You do, of course, get the tax relief on the capital expenditure, but only years in the future when the property is sold. So it's always best, if you can, to have the property trading first, even if you accept a lower rent for it not being in sparkling condition. In those circumstances, any subsequent repair work and upgrading is much more likely to be treated as revenue expenditure and therefore allowable in that year against your personal tax liabilities. As far as interest is concerned, payments are back on mortgage. It's only the interest element and not the capital element. Another question we're often asked is, I've just remortgaged my house, my principal house, and I'm going to use that money to buy a buy-to-let. Now, I'm paying interest on that. Is that okay? Or am I somehow barred because I've borrowed that, as it were, from my principal property? Well, the short answer is this. It doesn't matter where you get the money from. It's the purpose to which it is put that is important. And therefore, if you remortgage and you owe interest back to the bank, then that will be deductible in your P&L account. Another essential part of the building blocks is capital allowances. Now, let's just step right back for a second. Of course, the two main pools, the 20% pool, let's call that the plant and machinery pool, and the 10% special rate pool. Don't forget that in the first budget in 2010, the annual investment allowance rose from £50,000 to £100,000, although George Osborne, in his first budget in June 2010, said that he was going to reduce that significantly to £25,000, but that's effectively not going to happen until 2012. Remind yourself, if you would, that the AIA can be put against either of those pools. Although if you've got choice, it clearly makes sense to use it against the 10% pool, in priority to the 20% pool, because then if you've got anything left over that needs relieving under the normal capital allowances rules, you're going to use them at 20%. Right, now let's use that information. Plant and machinery and buildings, can I get capital allowances on them? Yes for commercial property, no for domestic property, with one important exception, the furnished holiday let. So for most normal buy-to-lets, the basic rule in the Capital Allowances Act holds, which is that you can't have capital allowances on items within and I stress that word, within a dwelling house. Of course, that means that if you have items that help you run your property portfolio, like a van or a mower, ladders, etc., then those will not be within the properties and those are eligible for your capital allowances and indeed your AIA. Of course, it is possible for a commercial building, for example, to have both 20% on fixed plant and machinery and 10% allowances. Don't forget that in addition to the normal plant and machinery rules, there's the possibility of having 100% enhanced capital allowances in a number of rather distinct areas. The first of these is green spend, and there's a lot of useful information on that on the ECA website. That stands for the Enhanced Capital Allowances, and the website address, and I'll give it to you now, is www.eca.gov.uk. Okay, a quick word, of course, on the 10% special rate pool. These are the so-called integral fixtures, and they are things like central heating systems, air conditioning, electric lighting and power systems, hot and cold water, and so forth. Where do we get these? Only in modern commercial buildings. So if you were to go out and buy, say, a small commercial unit costing, say, £150,000, the point is that some of that spend would be eligible for these 10% special rate pool allowances. Oh, and indeed, of course, the AIA. Don't forget that one. Let's very quickly cover the enhanced capital allowances. There are three groups here, of which two have an importance. The first is energy technology, low emission cars, which I'm not going to spend any time on, and water technology. There's a long list of these which actually qualify for these 100% allowances on the ECA website. And to give you a very brief flavour of them, energy technology will include things like heat pumps, lighting, heating, refrigeration, even combined heat and power units. Water technology, we're talking about some quite basic stuff here, efficient taps, showers, toilets, even rainwater harvesting systems. So those green spend 100%ers are well worth thinking about because a lot of businesses are going to be eligible for that. And just to enhance the point, go and have a look at the ECA website. There's an awful lot of good stuff on it. Okay, let's also, as we come to the end of this quick review of capital allowances that are relevant to property, let's not forget the other allowances. The obvious one is the LESA. That's the Landlord's Energy Saving Allowance. That's at 100% rate up to £1,500 per property. And you can get that 100% allowance on things like roof insulation, wall insulation, and draft proofing. So if you're a landlord, for example, with a house or a block of, say, four flats all under one roof, four different properties, that's £1,500 per property, and you could get 100% capital allowances to green your building. There's another allowance that's been around for a year or two. Quickly going to mention this in passing, the so-called flat conversion allowances. And this effectively is to help bring inner city areas back to life by giving 100% allowances on the conversion of the upper parts of shops into flats. And the 100% capital allowance is available on the capital expenditure. That's within the Capital Allowances Act. There are some fairly tight rules on that, and it only applies to buildings that were built before 1980. So its purpose is to try and bring back some of the older buildings. So if anybody's involved in that, you need to go and look at the details in the Capital Allowances Act. Okay, as we end up on capital allowances, let's quickly ask the question about domestics. We said a moment or two ago that we can't have capital allowances in domestic buildings. That rule is absolutely crystal clear within the Capital Allowances Act. So if they're not permitted, then what is on offer? Well, there's an essential read for anybody giving advice or who is involved in property letting. It's an extra statutory concession, and it's known as B47. It is a vital read. Nobody can offer advice on land and property without having read that. Now, you'll be aware that at the moment, extra statutory concessions are under attack because the whole idea of them is they're not legal, and HMRC are dealing with that rather mighty problem at the moment. But as far as I can see, it's still there. So what does this important read offer us? Well, it says that because you can't have capital allowances on domestic properties, you can basically have a choice, either the famous 10% wear and tear allowance or the renewals basis. And the renewals basis, of course, is the less efficient one. The 10% wear and tear allowance gives you tax deductions and tax reliefs immediately on letting, whereas the renewals basis gives you nothing for the first spend on, say, a fridge or a sofa, and it's only when you come to replace them that you get the full 100% on the renewal. Now, that is quite a lot of work in ESC B47, but as I said, you've got to do that because there's some weird little rules in there and they need to be read enormously carefully. Okay, that concludes my review of the basic building blocks. Let's now move on and look at a UK property business.